This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and on the episode today, we will be joined by champion Wes Reynolds. Hoosier Wes was in attendance down at Hard Rock Stadium on Monday night, watching his alma mater win the national championship 27-21. So I'm sure Wes has floated back from South Beach to Las Vegas. Can't wait to talk to Wes. And it's funny that it just lines up that we will have Wednesdays with Wes, and he is the champion, Wes. Can't imagine he ever anticipated winning a championship or being a part of a championship for them as a football program. But here we are in 2025, well, now 2026, Indiana is your champion. Adam Burke will check in. We'll have some final thoughts, wrap up the season there. And I really just wanted to open up the podcast, recapping the season. Also giving you an update about the offseason here on the podcast, and giving a big tip of the cap to you guys and everyone that's been involved on this podcast. This has been year three of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and it really has taken off, man. It's a testament to you guys, the loyal listenership that we have, and hopefully we can grow this thing and continue to add more people to the CFB podcast army, if you will. But before we dive into some final records and looking back at some of the futures that we placed, some good, some not so good, I did just want to point out Indiana and the run that they've had. And we'll get into this, obviously, with Wes Reynolds here in just a little bit. But I saw Circa put up a tweet after the national championship. July 15th at Circa, Indiana 200-1 to win the title, 6-1. To make the college football playoff, 25-1 to win the Big Ten, and Fernando Mendoza to win the Heisman Trophy, 80-1. Jeff Sherman was on VSiN Primetime on Tuesday night. He is the VP of Risk Management over at the Westgate Superbook here in Las Vegas. Echoed the same sentiment, 200-1 in August on Indiana. I know BetMGM had them around 100-1 all offseason and into the season. Matt Grill let us know DraftKings Sportsbook around 200-1 during the offseason as well. They are the longest shot to ever win the national championship in college football, at least on record. I don't know, you know, way back in the day, but sports odds history and other places that keep track of this thing, we haven't seen anyone that long of a shot. I asked the Bear, Chris Felica, to kind of put it into perspective, because he's a college football historian, on the last episode, and he thought of Auburn in 2010. They were, I believe, 24th in the preseason poll. Auburn was. They were on 50-1. They won the national championship. He mentioned Georgia Tech in 1990, co-champions with Colorado. They kind of came out of nowhere. But this is unique. We don't get things like this in college football. We don't really get things like this in American sports. I know people, and you can educate me on Leicester City. I know that was a magical run just a couple years ago in European soccer. But, you know, this doesn't happen. And it's a testament to Indiana. It's a testament to where we are as a sport. You know, it's funny. I think back to what we joked about during the offseason. Hey, who's going to be this year's Indiana? Who's going to be that team who makes the magical ride to the college football playoff? And you always kind of look at the group of five, right? And we got two of those teams in the college football playoff this year, Tulane and James Madison. But you look at a team like Miami, they didn't have long shots to make the playoff, right? This was a team that was a preseason top 10 team. Indiana, a fringe top 25 team, more difficult schedule this year than last, and you weren't going to get burned by this team when it comes to the long shot standpoint of the national champ or making the playoff, right? It was 100-1 a year ago, 6-1 this year, but they did it. And they are the greatest turnaround in the history of sports. What Kirk Cignetti has done is things that movies are made of, and it fit all perfectly together. And I want to talk more about this with Wes, about the staying power of Indiana, but a big credit to them. And, you know, look, I love our listeners. We've got a loyal listener Hoosier Bear that is feeling himself. He was letting me have it all throughout the offseason. We don't talk enough Indiana. Well, you were right, because we didn't talk enough Indiana during the offseason, and he had the tickets to back up his 200-1 tickets, his Mendoza to win the Heisman Trophy. So well done. Sometimes being a homer ends up paying a big chunk to you. So hell of a call by one of our loyal listeners, Hoosier Bear out there, who he was hard on me through the offseason. I guess he had a reason to be, as ultimately his beloved Hoosiers are national champions. So I wanted to just kind of sit here and talk to you guys about the offseason, because last year we took about a 3-4 month break and we came back in May and we had an episode each and every week. And I don't want to take a 3 or 4 month break this year. I want to keep this thing rolling. I feel like we've got really good momentum because of you guys, and we just have to find unique things to talk about. So I'm open to ideas. You can hit us up in the mentions of the podcast on iTunes. We do have an email, cfbpod@vsin.com. If you got some ideas, what would be interesting for you guys to hit on? I think maybe next week or the following, we'll get a couple really good portal guests on to break down the winners and losers of the portal. We'll get some odds makers on. I do want to maybe infiltrate a little college basketball in March when the bracket is out. Throw a little college hoops out there. I'm a big college hoops guy, and you can check out, you know, VSiN Primetime and the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on Saturdays at 9 a.m. But this is mostly going to be a college football pod. You know, we'll talk some NFL draft too. And in April, I love to bet the NFL draft. There's some really good people out there who love to bet the NFL draft, and there's opportunities to be had. But all in all, I want this to still be a CFB pod. Most of these unique markets aren't going to start coming out until probably late spring, early summer. But that doesn't mean we still can't talk about things, look at schedules. Schedules are starting to come out now. Adam Burke and I will allude to Texas Tech's pretty easy schedule heading into the 2026 season. So I'm open to ideas. I want to be here. I love this podcast. I love what we've created, and I want to keep it rolling. So that leads me into just the thank yous for this year. Thank you, first and foremost, to you guys. You know, it's crazy. I think back to the summer and being in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, right outside Funland, and someone coming up to me and talking to me about Hawaii football and thanking me for the Hawaii ticket that they had, where they were an underdog against Stanford and ultimately closed as a favorite. And as we all know, thanks to our guy, Kansei Matsuzawa, the myth of the Tokyo Toe started against Stanford and with the game-winning field goal. But, you know, you guys have been amazing. We started up a YouTube channel this year, and I didn't know how that would be. I was talking to producer Wyatt Tomchek about it, and we were like, we'll see. You know, how many people are going to subscribe to this thing? We're over 1,000 subscribers just one season into this bad boy. So, you know, that's something we've added, the YouTube, the video element of this podcast. We used to always do the Thursday episode on YouTube on the VSiN channel, but we created our own channel and it's been a great success so far. So keep following us on YouTube. The iTunes numbers early on in the season, we found ourselves in the top 100 multiple times early on in the season. I mean, that's unheard of for what we have been able to do. So the numbers have been steady all year long. You guys love the Thursday episode with me and Matt, which is always our best episode when you look at some of the numbers. But let's keep growing this thing. Keep hitting, you know, 5-star reviews. Keep writing those ratings. It really does help. I know I say it a lot, but it does help us out as we kind of continue to grow this podcast. So I just want to keep this thing rolling all off season long and kind of keep rolling with you guys. And thanks to our sponsors, you know, we're able to make this Hawaii trip happen this year. And I think I've told you guys about it. It all started with a text message to Timmy Chang. It really was his idea, believe it or not. You know, I texted Timmy Chang about the Stanford game, just joking around that they were early on an underdog. And he said, "Hey, why don't you guys come out here?" And it started with his idea. And then Steve Bookatz over at Nahoku Jewelers, he kind of green-lighted it, loved the idea to help us go out to Hawaii. And then we got hooked up with our great friends over at Hawaii Sports Radio 1190, Koo and company over there, Michael and Paul. They were so amazing. And then they connected us with my guy Mike at Rainbow Authentics, and they became a season-long sponsor. They connected us with Kahala Shirts, who was a sponsor as well. So this thing all came together, over the summer. Just got to know some awesome people, and hopefully we continue to grow it, get some new sponsors. But they were kind of in on the ground floor of this podcast, and you've heard me talk about Rainbow Authentics. I've been wearing the hat. I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me about the hat that I wear on this podcast each and every week and almost every episode from Rainbow Authentics. So let's keep Rainbow Authentics a thing. You know, they've got their Tokyo Toe line that we've discussed, tokyoto.com. So you make sure you check them out. But they were loyal sponsors all throughout the season. And just was great to meet Mike and Koo and everybody out there in Honolulu to make that week zero broadcast happen. I never in my wildest imagination did I think that VSiN would head out to Hawaii and be able to do shows. And, you know, Justin, our producer, was able to come out and help, you know, make that happen as well. And speaking of producers, we've got really awesome producers on this podcast. Ryan Hunter, who does all the audio side. He is so jacked up every time we talk to him about these podcasts. Wyatt Tomchek has really spearheaded all the video, edits the video, puts it up on YouTube. He's been incredible for how this thing has all come together, how we have really exploded on YouTube. And stepping in quite a bit was Rick, my producer on my Saturday show. Rick's done an amazing job. So just wanted to thank everybody that's been a part of this podcast. So before we wrap up the opening segment, because I know I've kind of rambled, but it's the end of the season, I wanted to look back at some bets that we had on the show. And Matt, not that it was a competition, but he won the competition. Matt Newman's final record on best bets on the show. And this doesn't include him giving out Indiana 10-1 or Mendoza, I think plus 250. These are just games on the podcast every Thursday, our best bets. Matt Newman's with a winner in the national championship, as he had Miami +8.5. He wrapped up the season 53-38-3. So he had a 58% clip this year. So Matt Newman's hell of a year with his best bets. I bounced back, had some up and downs this year. Bowl season was good. Obviously, bowl season's a unique challenge from the standpoint of trying to get numbers that don't move all that much. But official documented plays here on the podcast on the Thursday episode, 54-49-4. We did go 2-0 in the national championship, but 52.4%. So not ideal, but above 500, but overall, as a podcast, 107 winners on the best bet recap. So not too shabby. Their win totals were great this year, and that was a big nod to the guests we had all off season long. I know Wes Reynolds and Todd Furman loved Army under their win total. We were able to get that home. My guy Joshua Nunn, Step on a Duck, he loved Southern Miss over their win total. Also, Colby Dant loved that one. But I want to do a best bet of the year and a worst bet of the year here real quickly. So, best bet of the year, as much as I would love to give out the Hawaii winner on July 19th, I gave out Hawaii over 5.5 wins. Shout out to our guy, Timmy Chang, and everyone out there on the island for getting that one home, or the Hawaii Moneyline winner back on July 2nd. I think the best bet winner has to be North Texas over 6.5 wins. For them to go with 11 wins, to come just shy of making it to the college football playoff, losing in the AAC championship. August 11th, we gave out North Texas over 6.5 wins at DraftKings, and they ended with 11 regular season wins. So the season win totals on the show, 7-1. That's good. The futures, not so good. Our first future of the offseason was Clemson to win the ACC. We got closing line value on May 18th at plus 140. They did not win the ACC, as they ended up going to the Pinstripe Bowl, a preseason showdown of top five teams in the Pinstripe Bowl in Penn State and Clemson. But I'm going to have to rag on myself about this one. July 16th, Mountain West Media Days were going on, and I gave out San Jose State to reach the Mountain West Championship. I love this bet. Plus 220. I loved Boise State to win the conference. That came home. But San Jose State, I will always be pro Ken Niumatalolo. Hope they have a bounce back season. We talked to Walker Egitt, their quarterback, in studio, in VEASAN studio, and I was all in. I talked myself into this schedule saying, well, they don't have to play Boise State. They don't have to play UNLV. They don't have to play some of the top teams in the conference. I really like them to make the conference championship at plus 220. Well, they won their first conference game, believe it or not. San Jose State did. They beat New Mexico, a team that we had no idea how good New Mexico was going to be. So in the first conference game, they beat New Mexico, but I think we had to have our radar up when they lost their season opener to Central Michigan. But they beat New Mexico on October 3rd at home, 35-28. And I think at that point, you had to be thinking, okay, we didn't know how good New Mexico would be, but hindsight, it's a pretty good win. They ended up going 2-6, finishing second to last in the Mountain West. So thankfully, you don't lose extra money for bad bets, but that would certainly, I would have to say, be the worst bet of the offseason. A couple long shots. We tried to find the long shots. Instead of playing Fernando Mendoza to win the Heisman Trophy, I bet Devin Dampier to win the Heisman Trophy at 100-1. Devin Dampier did win the MVP of the Vegas Bowl, but did not win the Heisman Trophy. Utah to win the Big 12. That was 6-1. I believe at one point, they might have got the odds on favorite to win the conference, and then their showdown with Texas Tech did not go all that well. They lost to BYU, didn't make it to the Big 12 championship game, so did not get home there. So all in all, win totals, very good. Futures, not so great. Alabama did make the playoff, which came home. Boise State won the Mountain West, but our long shot bets did not get there, unfortunately. So hopefully next year we have some long shot winners. But all in all, I think it was a pretty strong year, and proud of our win total bets that we were able to get home. But thought we'd have a little fun there ragging on some of the worst bets that were put out there. Okay, just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Like I said, we're not going anywhere. And before you know it, 220 days from today, August 29th, we will be back in action, week zero. So start the countdown clock now. We have Hawaii at Stanford, UNC versus TCU in Dublin, NC State in Virginia. We'll be playing in Brazil, New Mexico State at Florida State, and Memphis at UNLV. So there you go. Right now, our week zero schedule currently has 5 games in it, and Hawaii and Stanford will run it back like they did a year ago out on the island. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's connect with Hoosier Wes, the national champ. We relive the national championship with Wes Reynolds, the sights, the sounds from everything he took in out there in Hard Rock Stadium as the Indiana Hoosiers win the national title in 2025. We'll take a quick break. This is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we are back on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. It is a Wednesday, and this next gentleman has graced us with the lovely pipes of ABBA and other fine songs. And I don't know if I can rap Jadakiss. The champ is here, but the champ is here. Indiana from 200-1 in the offseason to national champions. Wes Reynolds, you were there. You have been all over this Indiana rise to meteoric the championship. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. But, you know, for someone like yourself who has been through the thick and thin of this Indiana football program, to be there on Monday night to watch your team win the championship, when that interception happened, what were the emotions? What was the stadium like down there in Miami?
When the interception happened, it was a little bit of a relief, obviously, because you never want the other team with the ball last. Yep. And in the second half, I thought Miami, from a macro sense, probably outplayed Indiana, to be honest with you, because Indiana started making mistakes that they haven't made all year. And Carter Smith, for example, the All-American left tackle, hadn't given up a sack all year, gives up one. First drive of the second half. Elijah Surratt, who drops nothing, dropped two passes in the national. It's like, oh my, this is how it's going to end. We're not making these, you know, because Indiana never beats themselves, right? They never make the mistakes. And Miami wasn't going to give it to him. Like, Miami wasn't going to go away, but they forced Carson Beck to try to make that throw down the field and threw an interception. And it was relief. And then just the culmination of the whole journey, Tim. And it, you know, it's been a pricey and expensive one, but I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Starting, you know, obviously went to Oregon for the regular season matchup and then going to all four playoff games. The fact that we like four, because I count four. I count the Big Ten championship. Essentially as a playoff, played four games. And I was like, I'm going to ride this journey as long as it lasts. And it never ended. It did end with 16-0 in a national championship. But I also have to tell you, Tim, I've never been more grateful the fact that I don't have to travel this week anywhere else. It's like, we're done now. We don't have any more games. I wish I was in Bloomington for the big celebration on Saturday, but it's like, man, I've been in enough airports and on enough airplanes. You know, send me the commemorative rally towel if you get an extra one and complete the collection. But what a journey. What a team. And, you know, to come from the abyss, ascend almost the abyss in 2 years, and be national champions. It's a new world in college football. And, you know, Kurt Cignetti is Kurt Cignetti now. And just to be, you know, not only to win this, but also to be looking forward, because I know we're going to do that briefly here, looking forward to the next season and have them as one of the favorites. It's like, this is not a one, you know, it might not be another national championship, but this is not a one-hit wonder. Like, they're going to have more top hits on the charts here. I don't think this program is stopping, and they're going to keep this momentum going for a little while at least.
Well, you think about 2024, there were shops that had them 100-1 to make the playoff. They adjusted that. They were 6-1 to make the playoff this year. Well, we didn't adjust, or we, the books didn't adjust on them winning the title. So I don't know what they have to adjust on now, because you're not going to get Indiana on the cheap ever again while Kirk Cignetti is there roaming the sidelines. And yeah, I mean, you're right, man. It was a magical run. I know you retweeted it, people eating crow. And, you know, I give, you know, Josh Pate and some others credit for recognizing, hey, we were wrong. And, you know, I think this podcast, well, I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, we were all over Indiana. You've been obviously the driving force for this Hoosier team. I didn't think they would drop off, but never in my wildest dreams did I think they could win the national title this year, and let alone not only win it, Wes, but to be an 8.5-point favorite in the national championship. I mean, that's the unique thing about this, because when you take a step back, 200-1 to win the title, it's the longest shot ever in the history of the sport to win it, at least from, you know, a documented standpoint. But they're not really Cinderella, because they were an 8.5-point favorite in the national title. They were a 3.5-point favorite in the semifinals. They were a touchdown favorite in the Rose Bowl. Yes, they were an underdog to in the Big Ten championship, but only by, you know, 3.5. So it's a unique thing, because they're not your typical Cinderella in this regard. They were the best team in the country going into the national title game, but preseason, obviously, they were. It's the greatest turnaround in the history of sports. I've said it for weeks now. I don't know any other thing that really compares. Like I said in the open, I'm not a soccer guy, maybe Leicester City or something like that, but Wes, you know sports as well as anyone. You bet golf, maybe you golf long shots, but I mean, a 200-1 team in this sport. When I looked at Van Pelt on Monday night, Wes, I looked over at his shoulder and it said Indiana 2026 national champions. And I was like, it feels like we're in a video game. This does not happen. We don't see this type of program win a national title in this sport, but they did.
And the fact that they weren't a complete underdog, they weren't an underdog at all. They, you know, and we've said it on this podcast, I felt after that Oregon game that they were the best team in the country, even though they weren't ranked as such. That's when I first realized, okay, this team can maybe win the whole damn thing, or certainly they're going to be in the fight till the end. And a lot of it, you know, when you go undefeated, you're going to need some breaks. And I think this was ESPN Insights. Indiana didn't lose a fumble over the last 15 games. I think it was 1,047 snaps. They fumbled in the opener against Old Dominion, never lost a fumble. So that means when you do fumble, you recovered every single one. So you got to get some breaks, but you also got to make plays in every single time when the chips were down. Because I was sitting in a section, by the way, down there at a Hard Rock Stadium in Miami on Monday night, and there were a lot of Miami fans in a section. They're like, this guy won the Heisman? No more than 2 minutes later is that fourth and five, the quarterback draw that essentially clinched the game eventually for Indiana and gave them a 10-point lead at the time. It's like, yeah, that's why he won the Heisman, because he makes the plays and he delivered every single time. How many incredible catches did Charlie Becker make?
Oh, my gosh.
How many incredible catches? Omar Cooper, of course, in the back of the end zone at Penn State. How many great catches did Elijah Surratt make? And how many times they need to get that third down, even though they're not running it for a great clip, and they get that third down every single time. They don't get penalties. You know, they don't beat themselves. And every single time, and just how well coached and how well prepared this team was every single time, they just never let down. Even though that game got a little too close for comfort at the end against Miami, and I'll be honest, I was like, this can't end this way, where you had to settle for that field goal. And then you lose on the last drive. This can't end like this. It's one thing if you get blown out, but this can't end this way, and it didn't. And it didn't deserve to end that way, I don't think, for Indiana. I think they're the very deserved national champion. And, you know, we'll see how long they can keep this going. You know, that's how college football works. It's like, okay, you enjoy it for a couple days, and then Coach Cignetti and the staff are on to the next, you know, and guys going to the NFL and getting invites to the Senior Bowl, guys going in the portal, guys coming in from the portal. So that's what Indiana is going to be doing. But I think this program has staying power. It absolutely does. I don't think you're going to see them. They're not going back to, you know, winning six games or seven games. That's a great season. No, this is a different sandbox that they're playing in now. And I think Indiana's going to stay in that sandbox with a lot of the other big boys, because maybe Indiana now is a big boy in college football.
Well, I mean, they got the money, they got the coach, and, you know, this is a program, to your point, it's not going anywhere, and the continuity on that coaching staff. I would say enjoy Brian Haynes now, because he's probably going to be a head coach next year. That dude is an absolute stud.
How many more raises can they give him? And you brought up a point, Tim, because I want to add to this. Now that you're at this level, now you're not the hunter anymore. You're the hunted, which not only means your opponents that you play on the field, but you're the hunted in terms of your players and your coaching staff. Like, they lose their strength coach, Derek Owens. By the way, he didn't even fly back with the team because he took the Tennessee job for like $1.25 million. So you have money, but you don't have unlimited money, you know, because they gave Brian Haynes a big raise. They gave Mike Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, a raise. Well, that means somebody might not get the raise that another school can give. So, you know, they're going to start trying to pilfer your staff and pilfer your roster. And that's what you got to do. And they're now dealing with what Notre Dame deals with. They're dealing with what Ohio State deals with, and Georgia and Oregon and Alabama and all the other powers in college football. So that's the price you pay. But it was well worth the price. You know, like, you know, I say, oh, my God, you know, this is costing so much. It's like, you know what? I wouldn't have missed it for the world. I'm glad I did that. I'll worry about tomorrow.
No, and I'm so happy that you experienced it all. And I know the ticket prices were quite expensive, but hopefully maybe you had some futures tickets that were able to cash there on your beloved Hoosiers that were able to help offset some of the costs. It wouldn't be this podcast if I didn't weave Notre Dame into it, but I had to laugh at this. Pete Sampson of The Athletic said, total college football playoff wins over the past 2 years, the state of Indiana 6, the entire SEC 5. So who knew, Wes Reynolds, Indiana, the Hoosier state? It's not a basketball state after, you know, Purdue losing to UCLA in hoops. Now it's a football state with the champ and last year's runner up.
In 49 states, it's just football, but this is Indiana. And that's the usual tagline, of course, for basketball, that the Indiana Pacers, who made their way. And God, what a year for me, like, as a fan. I get to see the Pacers in the NBA Finals. They get to a Game 7 against a great team with a chance to win. Tyrese Halliburton ruptures his Achilles, and then that was all done and now out for the season. And then to start 2026 with Indiana winning the national championship. That's sports, man, and that's why we love it. We, you know, we love the pain, but we love the joy as well.
Look, the pain is usually more so than the jubilation. But when you get that sweet, sweet taste of a title, there's nothing better. And I can only imagine what you and that enormous fan base, alumni base was feeling down at Hard Rock Stadium. Over under 2.5 years before Mendoza's dive into the end zone is a statue outside Indiana Stadium.
I am going to say slightly to the over. They're going to have Scott Dolson and the athletic department going to have to ask for more money now. Like I said, we were playing for in a bigger sandbox. Like, I could build the Kurt Cignetti statue now, I think, even if he never wins another championship, to win essentially not only the national championship, but also two bowl games, but also the Big Ten for the first time in over 50 plus years. Yeah, like, how can you top it? But he's going to try. Like, that's just the way he is, man. Like, he'll crack a smile. He'll enjoy his Hoosier beer from Upland, which he's now got a lifetime supply of, apparently.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. The local brewer there in Bloomington. But, you know, that's just the way he's wired, man. Like, he's going to say, like, okay, let's get started on next year, you know, enjoy this till the weekend. And then it's like, okay, we've got all these recruits and these visitors in for our championship weekend. Now we got to start on the 2026 season and see if they can run it back in Las Vegas in 2027. At least that would save old Uncle Wes a little bit of money if they can end up here in Las Vegas.
Can we get a Hoosier State showdown in Vegas in 2026 or 2027?
I'm all for it. And the odds, by the way, indicate that very well could happen. I'm just looking at DraftKings right now. Indiana and Ohio State 7-1, right behind the Texas Longhorns and the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at plus 750, Oregon at plus 850, and then everybody else double digits or more.
I'm going to go ahead and break some news right now. October 17th, Indiana hosting Ohio State. I'm going to go ahead and say big noon kickoff. I'm just going to lock that one in right now, Wes.
Yeah, I need to look at hotel rooms, by the way, for that and see what those are. I'm sure those are already off the charts.
Yeah, I actually booked my hotel for that day in Provo, Utah. Notre Dame BYU will be on October 17th as well. So there you go. We can, as I slip in another thought on Notre Dame. All right, before I let you run, we will certainly catch up with Wes as the offseason goes on. I can only imagine you've already spent thousands of dollars traveling and tickets, but I can only imagine how much money you're going to spend at Home Field Apparel here in the...
They're already releasing the gear. Dang it, Connor, you IU guy, you started that brand, by the way, on the basis of us losing to Duke in the Pinstripe Bowl, where we thought the kick was good and they ruled it no good up there in Yankee Stadium. And that's how we started this brand, and it's become an absolute Goliath here. So the championship gear is already out. So it's like, now when you think you're done traveling, it's like, now I'm buying gear, and I'm buying the commemorative Sports Illustrated and the commemorative Indianapolis Star and all that stuff. But money well spent for something
the
that I never thought would happen. And it has happened. It still hasn't totally sunk in yet. You know, it's kind of getting a little bit more sinking in day by day, but it's still hard to process what we've just witnessed here over the last several weeks.
All right, final thought. Give us a quick elevator pitch on the 2026 Indiana Hoosiers. We know they've already hit the portal. They're bringing in Josh Hoover. They're bringing in Nick Marsh from Michigan State. So give us a quick 2026 view of what the Indiana Hoosiers will look like. As you mentioned, at DraftKings, 7-1. So they are the co-favorites right now to win the title in 26.
Well, you mentioned it, Tim. It's not Hoosiers. It's Hoover as the starting quarterback for Indiana, who, by the way, the number one returning passer in college football from a yardage standpoint. Carter Smith, their left tackle, said that he's going to run it back. They're going to lose some guys in the draft. They're probably going to get 8 to 10 guys drafted all throughout, including the Heisman winner. But looking at the schedule for Indiana, too, in terms of the road games, their toughest games are at Michigan and Washington. So they get Ohio State at home. The schedule is very, very manageable, I think, for Indiana to do this again, or to at least be in the college football playoff, where it's almost like the expectation is to get to the college football playoff. But Indiana has to now be the hunted. They're not the, now teams aren't looking at Indiana as just another game on the schedule where the Hoosiers were everybody's homecoming seemingly for about 20 years straight. Now it's like, we got to step up for these guys. But, and all these other schools in the conference, not just the big boys, the Ohio States, the Michigans, the Penn States, but the middle teams, the Iowas, the Minnesotas, Wisconsin, UCLA, they think, hey, if they can do it, we can do it. So everybody's going to be, Indiana's got the target on its back, but I think that they're ready for it.
Wes, Wednesdays with Wes has been so much fun throughout the season. It makes it that much better that we were able to do it all the way through the championship game and your beloved Hoosiers bring on home a national title. Just crazy that we're saying those words, but in 2026, who the heck knows what's going to happen.
Keep saying them. Maybe I'll believe that it happened.
Wes, appreciate you, sir. Thank you for all the insight, and no doubt we'll be catching up with you. Make sure to check out Wes, by the way, the Long Shots podcast. The best golf betting podcast out there. He, Kelly Bidlin, and Matt Brown. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll check in with Adam Burke right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, putting a bow on the 2025 season. Joined, as always, by Adam Burke, gentleman who joined me every Monday, and he has been with this podcast since we started this bad boy. Three seasons, Adam, in the books, and hopefully many more to come. And before we know it, we'll be focusing in on futures bets, breaking down schedules and all of that, but kind of putting a bow on the season. I opened the show kind of discussing the long shot of Indiana, and as we all know, there were 200-1s out there, but we kind of gave them their justice last week. Just the creation of this team, Cignetti putting this all together. As you watched everything unfold on Monday night, did anything kind of stand out to you regarding this Indiana team and how we look at this team and how we will look at this team moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things that stand out, right? One of them is that, they never got rattled. You know, mm-hmm. It felt like this was a team, didn't really matter the situation. They didn't play a whole lot of close games this season. They played a few. You know, obviously the game against Penn State is the one that really stands out. And, you know, Ohio State kind of screwed things up on their own in the Big Ten championship game. But Indiana just never got rattled. You know, I mean, they just, for as much as Kirk Cignetti was animated on the sidelines and he'd chew guys out when they came back to the sideline and all of that, like, they just always had their composure. And that was such a, you know, it's such an important thing when you talk about the college football playoff, where all these teams in theory are good, right? So the margin for error gets a little bit smaller. You know, you have to make sure that you're taking care of the things you're supposed to take care of. And for Indiana, a team that didn't really hurt themselves at all throughout most of the season, didn't turn the ball over, second fewest average penalty yards per game, even though they had some whistles on them, you know, in the national championship game, they just never got rattled. And I think that speaks to the age and the maturity level of this football team. A lot was made of that as we were heading into the college football playoff national championship game of, hey, there's a lot of 23, 24-year-old guys on this roster, guys that, you know, probably already have families, guys that are kind of set in their ways, set in their lifestyles, stuff like that. I think that we probably will see, you know, teams look to get a little bit older here through the transfer portal. And obviously the money that guys can make through NIL is going to keep them, you know, trying to stay eligible as long as they can.
Yeah, I was just looking through a couple of things. Our buddy Brad Powers, he puts out a newsletter every week. I reference it a bunch here on the podcast, and his final power ratings has Indiana number one, which shouldn't come as a big surprise. He upgraded Indiana 17 points as the year went on. And you do power ratings. We always discuss your power ratings. I mean, Indiana was a team, I think, when we look back at the preseason, I did not expect them to fall off the face of the earth. But I did not obviously anticipate this. Would I have been shocked if they made the playoff? No. But to win the national championship, to be an 8.5-point favorite in the title, to win the Rose Bowl, to win the semifinals by a combined 69 points, it's a testament to them. It's a testament to Cignetti. And look, you went out and got Fernando Mendoza, and something we were kicking around a little bit was it's a very small sample size, but the last 2 years when the portal has become as prominent as it has become now, the quarterbacks in the national championships were all first-year transfer guys. When you look back at a year ago, Will Howard for Ohio State, Riley Leonard for Notre Dame, and then this year, Carson Beck for Miami and Fernando Mendoza for Indiana. I think it's a bit of a blip, but that being said, it does kind of pique your curiosity about next year when, you know, a preseason number one team more than likely is going to be Texas. They obviously have a holdover in Arch Manning, or it could be Ohio State, who has a holdover in Julian Sain. Could it be Notre Dame with CJ Carr? So there's a lot of programs, Adam, that actually have their quarterback coming back. Even Oregon. I mean, I know Dante Moore is a transfer, but he will be in the system for now a third year, even though it will be a new system with Will Stein departing for Kentucky. But then you look at a team like Indiana, as they go out, they get Josh Hoover. You look at Texas Tech. They went out and upgraded at the quarterback position with Sorsby. Miami with this nightmare situation unfolding with Mensa. So is the transfer portal quarterback being the winner and runner up the last 2 years a blip, or is it going to be a trend moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the sample size is small, right? But I talked about this already in terms of Indiana, just the overall age of their roster. I mean, you know, when you've got to go out there and beat these other elite programs, you can't turn the football over. You know, you've got to have a guy who knows how to read defenses, knows how to change the play, knows when to tuck it and run. You know, we saw more of that from Mendoza in the title game. We saw some of that from Carson Beck, you know, especially in the game against Ole Miss and the game against Ohio State, too. We saw Will Howard do that throughout the course of the playoff. You know, Notre Dame's only offense by the time they got to the title game was really just Riley Leonard trying to run the football. So, you know, I think it's really, really important. I think it's a, you know, vital type of thing. And look, if you're a coach at a premier program, right, like it's something that you're thinking about. You know, having a guy who's played a lot of college football is something that can be, you know, a really big positive for you. And maybe it's the age thing, right? Maybe it's just that, you know, some of the younger guys on the team do sort of look up to that type of player. They've had a little bit more time to develop, you know, those leadership intangibles and stuff like that. I don't know. You know, maybe next year, like Ohio State does win it and Julian Sain's just, you know, a sophomore quarterback who goes out there and wins him a title, or it's Carr at Notre Dame, or, you know, something like that. But it is something where I do think moving forward, you know, the NFL is a copycat league, right? Everyone's trying to do the same thing there, building off the Sean McVay offense, trying to poach from the Sean McVay coaching tree, all of that. Like, we're probably going to see teams sort of try to do a lot of similar things in college football, getting a veteran starting quarterback. You know, do we see like Oklahoma State take a big step forward with basically half of North Texas's roster, right, plus Drew Mestemaker, much like what we saw with Indiana here, Kurt Cignetti and the James Madison connection? You know, is that something that some of these teams are going to look to do, whether they're middling programs or, you know, elite programs that decide to make a change? So I'm assuming that we're going to see a lot of follow the leader and a lot of copycat stuff going forward.
Yeah, I'm going to do a big episode, I think, next week or the following, just looking at the portal, where we're at, where players have moved to. But just to kind of run through the quarterbacks real quickly, Sam Levitt, Arizona State to LSU, Brendan Sorsby, Cincinnati to Texas Tech, Drew Mestemaker, North Texas to Oklahoma State, as you mentioned, DJ Lagway, Florida to Baylor, Dylan Raiola, the unique situation where he's going to back up Dante Moore, kind of do the Dante Moore plan, right? Dante Moore started for a decent amount at UCLA, backed up Dylan Gabriel, seemed to work out well there. He's also coming off of an injury. Mensa, more than likely headed to Miami. Byron Brown, USF to Auburn. Rocco Beck, he goes from Iowa State to Penn State. Josh Hoover, as we mentioned already, TCU to Indiana. Austin Simmons, Ole Miss to Missouri. The list goes on and on, but we'll kind of jump into you know, where new quarterbacks are, the system that they're headed into, and, you know, what it will look like a year from now. You know, I think a question that's been thrown around a lot since Indiana hoisted the trophy on Monday night, Adam, more so from a betting standpoint, is, are we going to see more stories like Indiana? Are we going to get the long shots? Because, you know, this sport does not give us long shots, maybe a conference championship, maybe a playoff team, But the long shots in college football have never really existed. But Indiana, as I mentioned in the open, was 200-1 to win the title on July 15th at Circa, was 200-1 at Westgate in August, was 200-1 at DraftKings, you know, during the offseason, was over 100-1 in the season until they beat Illinois by 53. Does this era open up for us as bettors to look for those long shots? Because Adam, you know, this podcast, like I mentioned, has only been going on for 3 years, but really the long shots don't necessarily exist from a national championship standpoint. But now Indiana has kind of debunked that, right? Indiana back-to-back years, you went from the long shot to make the playoff at around 100-1 to the long shot to win the title. They're the longest shot ever to win the national championship in the history of the sport when odds have been, you know, available. So does Indiana open up the opportunities for us bettors to look for long shots? Or was this just kind of a perfect storm of an elite coach, a coach who came from James Madison, brought a lot of those pieces in with him? They hit gold with a transfer portal quarterback and Fernando Mendoza. Was this a perfect storm? Shout out George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg. Or was this a trend to come here for college football?
Well, obviously, hindsight being 2020, right, we should have evaluated the staying power of Indiana based off of what they did last season, where Fernando Mendoza, I figured it was kind of a lateral move, you know, going from Curtis Rourke to Fernando Mendoza. You know, I didn't think that it was necessarily an upgrade at the time. Obviously, it turns out it was one hell of an upgrade because Mendoza won the Heisman Trophy. But maybe we just mispriced Indiana because it was just so hard to believe that Indiana could be good at football, and let alone like back-to-back seasons, but as good as they were, you know, maybe this team shouldn't be viewed as a Cinderella. Maybe they're a Cinderella in number only, and we just had it completely mispriced, right? Because you have to put the Ohio States and the Oregons and the Texases and the Georgias and the Alabamas and, you know, the LSU. Remember, Garrett Nussmeier was the preseason Heisman favorite, right? So you have to put a lot of these different programs ahead of a team like Indiana. And I think also something that, I mean, for better or worse, it kind of benefited Indiana, right? Like Miami knocked out Texas A&M, Ohio State, and Ole Miss, you know, three teams that were up there in that national championship discussion. So Miami kind of cleaned out a lot of the field there, you know, that Indiana didn't really have to contend with, right? I mean, they pummeled an Alabama team that just wasn't up to snuff, that should not have been in the 12-team playoff. Yeah, they did it the way that you're supposed to do it, right? They blew them out. Same thing with Oregon, who I think was a little bit overrated and overranked throughout the course of the season. But a lot of those teams still got there, you know, and in the sample size of, you know, one game, anything can happen, right? I mean, you see a 4-touchdown dog, you know, pick off a big favorite in the regular season, you know, every single year, right? In the sample size of one game, anything can happen. So I think maybe we just all kind of couldn't believe the notion that Indiana could be good 2 years in a row. But again, you look at it, three of the four teams that have been in the title game, Ohio State, Notre Dame, very, very blue blood powerhouse programs, and Miami, a team that every single year has the talent, but they found a way to screw up a game in the regular season or two or three. Look, I mean, is it possible that we get long shots? Yeah, absolutely. Keep in mind, the ACC championship game was Virginia and Duke, right? So, like, things could have gone very, very differently. You know, we had all these weird tiebreaker situations possible in the Big 12. You know, I think with the transfer portal and the dispersal of talent, you can get some of these long shots that go unless these conferences kind of smooth out the tiebreaker procedures, because you're going to have 5 2-loss teams in the Big 12 probably again, you know, after Texas Tech was the easiest schedule in the country next year. So
that schedule's a joke.
Oh, it's a joke. It's absolutely pathetic. But so I think it is possible in that sense. But I think also, you know, we need to evaluate the roster and evaluate the talent more so than getting caught up in the name that's next to the odds.
You know, it's funny. I've got the preview magazines right here, and I was just flipping through them while you were talking. Phil Steele had Indiana preseason number 20. Our guy Brett Ciancia had Indiana preseason number 23. So it wasn't, and I'm pointing those two out because I think they're probably the two best in the preseason prognostication world, if you will. And they both had them top 25. It wasn't like 2024 where their preseason win total was 5.5, but nobody, I mean, I can't say nobody. I know one of our listeners, Hoosier Bear, who is feeling himself right now, as he should, with plenty of tickets to show the world at 200-1, and props to him as he cashed all of those. But nobody really expected this type of run and this sheer dominance. And I think that's the crazy thing to me, Adam, is not only did Indiana do this, but they were an 8.5-point favorite in the national championship game. They win the game, and as we all know, 27-21, the final score. But you look at these teams. I'm gonna mention the fraternity that Indiana is a part of: Rice, Vanderbilt, Kansas State, Tulane, Iowa State, New Mexico State, Kansas, Wake Forest, Rutgers, Northwestern, Indiana. That's number 126 to 136 in winningest programs in college football. Or if you want to flip it, the 10 losingest programs in college football. Indiana, still as of today, is the losingest program in college football. Now, assuming they continue on this positive trajectory, it does look like Northwestern will take the crown next year, as right now Indiana only 3 losses ahead of Northwestern as we look at it right now. But yeah, to answer my own question, I don't know. I mean, I think Indiana, as we found out, and Wes has been great about letting us know about the alumni base, and obviously Mark Cuban is very present now. When you have the backing like in Indiana, when you have the resources like in Indiana, when you have an elite coach like in Indiana, you can pull something off like this. So who is going to be that next team? You know a lot of people pointed out Texas Tech. The difference, Adam, between Texas Tech and Indiana in 2025, Texas Tech wins the Big 12. They're really, really good. But ultimately, the quarterback play was just not that good, right? Baron Morton was not good enough against Oregon, and they get shut out in that game. And you see them go out and they get Brendan Sorsby to be their guy moving forward. So could Texas Tech win a national title? Sure, I think it's possible. But Indiana did this thing not solely through the portal. And I think that's something we discussed last week, and I think is worth mentioning, right? This is not a Indiana program that just went out and bought everybody to come into Bloomington, right? Aiden Fisher came from James Madison, and he was an absolute star in that defense. Elijah Surratt was a guy that started at St. Francis, Pennsylvania, transferred to James Madison, then goes to Indiana. Pat Coogan was a guy that started for Notre Dame, but then was told, hey, we actually like our other center a little bit better. We'd like you to stay, but we understand if you go. And he goes, and he's the starting center for a very, very good, maybe elite offensive line. And then Fernando Mendoza. Look, it's easy to go hindsight, like you mentioned. I think your mindset of Rourke to Mendoza being kind of a lateral move was more the norm than the exception, because Fernando Mendoza, I believe, was like rated 25th or so in the 247 portal ranking. So obviously very good, but not elite. So they struck it perfectly this year, and they were dominant, 16-0, joining the likes of 1894 Yale as a 16-0 program. So now this is a season that I think we will never forget. I certainly know Wes Reynolds will never forget it, but I don't know if it is for what is to come. I do think overall, though, as I'm rambling here, Adam, I do think this does open the doors for new teams when 5-10 years ago, it just felt like it was Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, those types of teams that could win the title. Now I do think the door is open, clearly, for more programs to win the national championship.
Well, and look, I mean, I think you have to look at it in terms of Mendoza, where, you know, coaching and scheme matter. You know, they matter a lot. And yeah, and a lot of guys in college football who may be super, super talented wind up not having great film because the play caller sucks, or because the offensive line is bad, or, you know, they don't have guys that can get open on the outside. They don't have a running game that can kind of soften up the defense a little bit. There's a wide variety of different things. And so, you know, when you look at the season that Mendoza had, you know, certainly he's got the measurables, he's got, you know, the mindset he's clearly a leader in that locker room, despite maybe being a little bit corny in the process. But like,
he did drop an F-bomb post-game.
He did. He did. And I give him a lot of credit for that. The way he got beaten up in that game, I'm sure he was dropping a few of them on the sidelines. But, you know, like, Cal had no actual semblance of a competent offense when he was there. So, you know, that's really what it is. You know, it's about evaluating the talent that's going to fit into what it is that you are trying to do. And I think that's another powerful element of the transfer portal is you're not recruiting a freshman and going, man, I hope this kid fits. Like, we love the skill set. The measurables are great. He runs fast. You know, he's a smart kid, all these kinds of things. Now you can actually go into the portal and get a polished product that you can either tailor your offense to or that you know is going to fit well in your offense and in terms of what you do. And that's what Indiana was able to do, you know, and I think now that's something that Texas Tech is probably able to do, where they had Baron Morton. They're like, you know what? We're going to see how this goes. He's already here. We spent a ton of money on the rest of the roster. Let's see what we've got here. And like you said, it wound up not being enough. So what did they do? They went out and got Brendan Sorsby. So like, this is something you can do now. If you set up the infrastructure of your program, you go get that missing piece. And it does seem like, based on what we've seen, you know, with the college football playoff here so far, that missing piece is probably an established starting quarterback for most of these programs.
Yeah, I still think ultimately it's some sort of inexact science of portal and high school recruiting. And I think what Indiana had was they recruited a lot of these guys via high school to James Madison. They came with them to Indiana. So it looks like it's mostly a portal roster when that's not necessarily the case the way that I look at it. But it's elite coaching. It's finding the right pieces. And who knows, is Josh Hoover going to fit Indiana like Fernando Mendoza fit Indiana? We don't know. We'll find out coming up in 2026.
And I just want to mention this too, where if Omar Cooper's out of bounds, what are we talking about? You know, who's the national champion at this point, right? I mean, if Ryan Day doesn't completely screw up the end of the Big Ten championship game, right?
Does the Penn State loss not really the number affect, one seed. But does the Penn State loss really affect their trajectory? Because they still would have been a playoff team.
They would have been a playoff team, but I don't know that they would have been the number one team. You know, so like they probably don't run into Alabama, you know, in the quarterfinals, right? You know, something like that. So there is a large element of luck involved in this too. And Ohio State, you know, they had their bits of luck the previous season. You know, there's a lot of that too, especially where all of these teams are super, super talented, right? And, you know, I mean, if Ole Miss and Miami ran it back again, maybe Ole Miss wins that game. You know, if Miami and Indiana run it back again, maybe Miami wins that game. You know, if Ohio State runs it back and Sain doesn't throw the pick six that completely changed the complexion of the game and actually hits Max Clair in the middle of the field, like, we're probably talking about a different outcome. So there are these little, you know, these focal points, these leverage points, whatever, where a lot of luck comes into it too. And so next year we may have a 7-1 or an 8-1 or a 9-1 preseason win the title, but we also may not, because again, college football and then the nature of how it's set up, you know, one game, one play can take you from being the number one seed in the playoff to maybe being the number five or the number six or something like that. So it's a very difficult target to try to pin down. And so I would just caution people with that. If you are looking to get involved in the futures market or anything, right? Like, these portal moves look great on paper, all these different types of things, but you need a lot of things to go right. You know, I'm starting to work on the MLB guide for 2026, which will come out February 17th at vsin.com. And like, a lot of times when you look at teams that make these playoff runs, like, they have this outlier season of performance with runners in scoring position during the regular season that carries over into the postseason, something like that. It's not necessarily repeatable skill year to year, right? Indiana lost one fumble and it was in the first game of the season. You know, like, there's a lot of things that kind of have to go in your way to sort of write this storybook trajectory. And so it's awesome for Indiana. It's awesome for their fan base. At the same time, you're maybe a play or two away from it not coming to fruition. So that's why you don't take these things for granted when your team wins at all, but also why when you're betting on these types of things, you know, it's not just who got who and who went where. It's a lot of also thinking, okay, what's the margin for error for this team? What can they survive? What can they overcome if the ball doesn't bounce their way or something like that?
1,047 offensive snaps and 15 games, the only fumble they lost in the first quarter of the season opener against Old Dominion. So, yeah, plus 23, I believe, in the turnover margin for the Indiana Hoosiers, your champion of the 2025 season. For those wondering, Adam, if you want a 200-to-1 shot right now, this is courtesy of DraftKings. Kansas State, Illinois, Houston, Virginia, Baylor, Arizona, and the team that never disappoints, Nebraska, sitting there at 200-to-1 to win the national title.
So I'll mention this, right, because I wrote about this, because we always, whenever a title is decided, we, you know, the next morning or that night, write up the futures odds for the next season, just as kind of a way to say, sure, hey, you know, like, things are over, but here's kind of a framework of, you know, what you can expect. I mentioned a couple of long shots worth considering, and interestingly enough, one of them was Houston at 200-to-1. Because Texas Tech has the easiest schedule, there's no doubt about that, and they do play Houston in September. But the Big 12, to me, feels like a conference that's probably going to be a lot like what it was this season, right? A lot of teams are going to go, you know, two losses in conference play. You know, they're going to have various tiebreakers and stuff like that. But Houston's a team, transfer portal quarterback in Connor Wegman. Now they're going to have two second-year coordinators because they had, you know, first-year offensive and defensive coordinators this year. Mekhi Hughes is coming back, who Willie Fritz, of course, recruited to Tulane. So, like, you start thinking about the long shots, and like I said, I'm not going to lock in any of these now, but something I'm starting to think about as spring games come together and stuff like that. Like, you can't take a long shot out of the Big Ten. Like, you just can't do it, right? You probably can't take a long shot out of the SEC. It's just, it's not going to happen. But the Big 12 and the ACC, I think those are your areas where if you're looking for a long shot, that's where you're going to find them.
And I would imagine, I haven't looked at the schedule yet, I don't know if ACC schedules, just the construction of them, I think the opponents are all out, but Virginia Tech's a team that's probably going to get a lot of love with their movement in the portal. So here we are.
Virginia got Bo Prabula.
Offseason is here, so looking forward to it. As I mentioned in the open, we're not going anywhere. We're going to have episodes all throughout the offseason. But Adam, appreciate every week you jumping on with the pod, man. And just give us one final VSiN.com. What's coming on the website as we bid farewell to the 2025 college football season?
Yeah, one thing before I get into the website, what we got going on, I want to thank you. You know, you and I, we coordinate times that work for us to record this podcast. You know, obviously, you're recording multiple episodes a week. So I want to thank you not only for your professionalism in hosting this thing, but also, you know, I mean, the way that we work together off the air, you know, I think is something that definitely makes this podcast successful. Thank you to Wyatt and Rick, our producers, Ryan Hunter, who helps master the audio for this as well. All of the people that have subscribed, all the people that listen regularly, the people that send us feedback on social media, you know, thank you to everybody who's involved with this because, you know, we've been trying our best to enhance our podcast library here at VSiN. And one of our anchors is this college football betting podcast, where, as you said, you know, now we're completely done with three seasons and it's been, you know, a pretty successful thing for us so far here. And of course, you know, thank you to everybody out there in Hawaii, you know, Timmy Chang, all of the, you know, Rainbow Authentics people, everybody who helped us by sponsoring this podcast, by being a friend of the podcast as well. You know, so I just want to give them a shout out here too. And, you know, look, it's always bittersweet when college football ends because I'm happy to get into a new market where I have to learn some new things and check into some new things. But, you know, look, over at VSiN.com, we're still covering college basketball. We have been since the start of the season. Major League Baseball is going to be ramping up here soon in less than a month with spring training getting underway. The World Baseball Classic this year as well. NBA, NHL, I know Wes is on this podcast, does golf for us. UFC back this weekend. Like, just because football is winding down or over doesn't mean we're done. And I think this is one of the most important times of the year over there at VSiN.com because now we're doing betting markets that people probably have had on the back burner, probably haven't been paying attention to. So, you know, head on over there, check out all of our content, our betting tools, the subscription options if you're not a subscriber. It's a really important time of year as we transition away from a sport that most of us feel like we know pretty well, you know, through a decent portion of the season. But now we're getting into some seasons that maybe we don't know as well. And so I think VSiN.com is a really valuable resource for you.
No, and kudos to you, man. I opened the podcast doing a similar thing, thanking everyone. And big thanks to you. Like you said, we started this podcast. You know, it was an idea that was thrown out there. We've decided to do the early week ones. Matt Humans and I do the late week ones. We added the midweek one as well. But appreciate you, the power ratings each and every week. Always love reading your content. Obviously, immediately up on the website. It's the first one of the first college football things out there. So a testament to you and getting that content out there. And before we know it, Adam, we'll be breaking down week zero, 220 days away, baby. We've got five games on that schedule. And before we know it, we'll be talking those week zero games. Much appreciated to you. I know you're one of the busiest men here at VSiN. So get back to work and we will talk to you before we know it, breaking down the 2026 college football season.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate everything, man. It's been a great season and I look forward to the next one.
That's Adam Burke. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to Wyatt. Thanks to Ryan. And once again, this has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And like I said in the open, we're not going anywhere. Plenty of off-season episodes coming your way right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.